Friday, 7th of September, Rabbi David Orlovsky, Family Values.
Okay, good morning, Rabbi Isai. We only have 45 minutes this morning. I just like to hear the sound of panic. In any event, we have not many mitzvahs this week. Even though it's a double parish, we don't have many mitzvahs this week. And one of the mitzvahs is a mitzvah which, in Mirta Hashem, we should have the schus to fulfill next year, which is, of course, the mitzvah of Hakel, where Moshe says, V'itzav Moshe Yisam Lema Miket Sheva Shonim V'moyed Shnas HaShmita B'chagat Sukkos, that in the Sukkot after Shemitah, so this coming year is Shemitah, which means this would apply to next Sukkot, and Mirta Hashem, there should be a Beis HaMikdash, and the Melech Yisrael will, in the Beis HaMikdash, read all of Sefer Devarim, and this is called the Mitzvah of Hakel. So there's a famous Gemara in Chagiga that deals with this mitzvah, and it says the following: Hakel is assemble the people, ha'anoshim v'hanoshim v'hataf, the men, the women, and the children. Says the Gemara in Chagiga. Im ha'anoshim ba'u lilmod, ha'anoshim l'shmoa, taf l'mabo. So first of all, the Chassam Sofer says that you have to look at this Gemara interestingly, because there's apparently a vav missing. Meaning, it did not say ha'anoshim im ha'anoshim ba'u lilmod v'ha'anoshim ba'u l'shmoa. It doesn't say that. It says im ha'anoshim bo lilmod kama hanoshim lishmoa. Says the Chassam Sofer, what this means is that the only way that the women are going to lishmoa is if the anoshim bo lilmod, and therefore if the father of the home, if the husband is not learning Torah, then one cannot expect their wife to be able to maintain a proper Torah perspective. The famous story with the Nativ, where the Nativ says that someone came to the Nativ and he says, I don't know what to do. He says, my wife doesn't respect me, people don't listen to me, my kids laugh at me, what should I do? He said, Bikovei itim l'tayr. Go and learn Torah. So he says, what's that going to help? They don't listen to me, they don't talk to me. He says, listen to me. Go and learn Torah. And after a while, I don't know how long it was, after a while he comes back and he says, it's amazing. It's like a different home. It's a different home. You know? I know just for myself that, you know, I have a very, very busy week, usually. I live in Eretz Yisrael, so if you have two full-time jobs and something on the side, you can make a living. So so that keeps me, not a good living, but at least a living, you know what I mean? Like, you know, Groucho Marx says, I worked myself up from nothing to a state of extreme poverty. So, you know, so if you move, if you're very busy, sometimes I'm running around, and come Shabbos, like every good year, I take a Shabbos nap, you know. So this last cycle, when they started Daf Yomi, so a big Talmud Chacham offered to do it with me, and I wasn't going to turn down an opportunity like that, just be whatever chavrusa like that, you know. So it's officially Daf Yomi Shir. He's the Rebbe, I'm the Talmud, and I think this way he gets free tickets to the Siyum at the end. Anyway, so we start going. So on Friday it's kind of hard to find time because we learn late at night. We learn from 9:30 to 10:30 because that's the only time in our schedules when we both get home. And we go till about 11, and so on Shabbos, what are you going to do? So Shabbos we add on 2 hours, right? 2 hours before Mincha, we do one blot, we do the other blot, you know. And now, I don't know what point it was, we started adding on three hours before Mincha and Shabbos. The first hour we're doing Tashlumim in Yerushalmi Shkalim, which we just didn't finish, you know, and there's other few prakim here and there that we're really going to finish. That was the decision, and then 2 hours to do that, which means that we, by the time we finish the Suda, Ab is running out the door, going to a shir, going to learn, And I just see for my kids, you know, I see my younger kids. And then, by the way, I'm already a famous Torah personality. I don't know if anyone's aware of this. So, which means that my kids should be impressed enough already. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm always surprised. But I remember once I had this offer to go away to one of these Pesach hotels. So I said, well, I'll discuss it with my kids, and I'm sure they're going to want to stay home for Pesach, you know. So I said to the kids, I said, listen, we had an offer to go to America for Pesach. And the kids were like, yay, we're going to America for Pesach, you know. So I said, no, we're not going to be going to Bob and Zadie. We're going to be going to a hotel. Yay, we're going to a hotel, you know. I said, 1 second, do you want to hear what I have to say? And one of the kids said, Abba, we're going whether you want to or not. I said, does anyone want to hear my opinion? He said, no. I said, we're only being offered this because people want to hear my opinion. How come here nobody wants to hear my opinion? And I always say, I travel the world to talk about chinuch banim because the alternative is staying home and doing it. So I'd much rather be someplace else talking about other people's kids. I don't have to be home to mine, you know. But this is the first thing, and that's why, of course, you know, like this morning, the fact that, you know, everybody knows, and of course, those of us who have children know that children know everything. You know, they listen on everything. There's nothing you do that your children aren't aware of. My wife, because all the good chinuch stories in our family revolve around my wife. So my wife was reading the Hamadiyah, and one of my teenagers said to her, like, there was no way to tell. I mean, she's just sitting there reading the paper, and the teenager said, and they said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm reading the paper." She says, no, your lips were moving. Well, I said, well, you know, I heard once in a shir that when you see, you know, one of these ads that we daven for, you don't have to wait till you get to shul. You can right away say a little tefillah, say a little tehillim. As soon as you see one of those things, please daven for you. Right away, say a little tehillim. So I took that on. I was like, wow, you do that? They were so impressed, you know. But the point of the point is that they're always watching. They're always watching. They're always listening. So that's the point that the Chassam Sofer makes. But I really wanted to make the other point, and that's Rabbi Yaakov Melissa, who's better known to those of us who learn as the Nesivus. And the Nesivus was, of course, quite prolific. And he has a small sefer on Chumash called Nachlas Yaakov. And every piece is a gem. Every single piece there. And he says on this piece over here, the Gemara in Chagiga, Im ha'anoshim ba'u lilmod, kama, ha'anoshim l'shmoa, taf lama bo. The men are coming to learn, and the women are coming to listen. What are the children coming for? Yeah? Litein schar l'veihim, to give reward to those who bring them. Yeah? Loses schar l'veihim, to give reward to those who come. To this, the Sivis has two questions. The first one is, where do you ever find a concept that a Kodesh Baruch Hu gives you something that is essentially pointless for you to do simply so you can get tzchar? Meaning, clearly there's no benefit to bringing little children to the base of Mikdash when the Melech is going to... One might even take it a step further and say that they're going to be slightly disruptive. Right? I don't know about English children, but I live in Israel, you know what I mean? And I only remember what the Brisker Rebbe said once. You know, he says about the little Yerushalmi children. He says, when they're little, they're so delicious you can eat them up. When they get bigger, you feel bad that you didn't. You know what I mean? So, the little children, you know, have a tendency to be disruptive. You know, you've ever been to one of those shiurim and somebody, you know, brings a baby and the baby's crying, you know what I mean? And everyone's like, keeps throwing, you know, nasty glances at the woman, you know, or at the baby, or at whoever is in the general direction, you know, and, you know, there's this. They take away, you know. People come to Shul Rosh Hashanah sometimes with little babies, you know, and they manage to daven. They're totally oblivious to the crying and the crashing. Everybody else knows, you know what I mean, but they don't really catch it, you know. Somebody told me that they were in the Ezra's Nashim, you know, one of my daughters, you know, and they went to daven, and this woman had brought her baby and was changing the nappy right there, and you know, and everybody was davening, you know what I mean. So one could argue that if you bring the little children, it's going to be disruptive. I think there's a point that can be made for that. So why were we told to do it? Nothing. To give reward. But why am I giving reward? For what point? That's question number one. And question number two, let's see if it's answered like this. If the men are coming to learn and the women are coming to listen, why do you bring the children? I have a real easy answer to that. What are you supposed to do with them? You can't just leave them at home. So you're going to have to bring the children. So what do you make? What's the point of making it a mitzvah for when I have to do it anyway? Right? No, you don't necessarily make a mitzvah out of eating lunch if you have to eat lunch anyway. You know what I mean? If it's something that's inherent, right? Everybody, all the adults are going. You have to bring the children. So what do you mean making it a mitzvah? And then the Sefer answers these questions with an absolutely brilliant insight, and he says, it's to tell you that when you're taking care of your children, it's not something that is getting in the way. It's not something that I have to do. It's a mitzvah. And it's such an important thing because, you know, very often we feel like, you know, our kids take a tremendous amount of time and effort, as they should. And you know, I have to do it because it's something you have to take care of. And Kodesh Baruch Hu added in these words into the pasuk to tell us not that it's something I have to do. This is a mitzvah. This is where we get our schar from. So I had what I consider to be a somewhat frightening story that happened. A psychologist came to me, wasn't in a professional capacity, and at least not for me, and he came to consult, and he said, I don't know what to do. I have this fellow who's learning in color, and his wife has three little kids, and she can't handle it. She's going out of her mind. What's going out of her mind? And the kids are suffering, and they're acting up, and there's trouble, and she needs help. And I said to the husband, you have to help. And he says, listen, my wife knew when she married me that I was a masman. She said she wanted to marry a masman, and I'm a masman. And that's what we understood. I get up early. I don't sleep. I don't know what these guys sleep. But I get up early. I go to an early minyan. I come back. I have a little breakfast. And I go to yeshiva. And I put in a very strong morning state. You can ask my rebbe. You can ask my yeshiva. Put in a strong morning state. I come back. I have a bit of lunch. Take a short nap. And I go back. I learn a shtaka afternoon state about mamish, you know, with all my kashrus. I come back. Have a bite of supper. I go back a little night kid, I come back 11 o'clock at night. What does she want from me? What does she want from me? So I said to him, did you speak to his Rosh Yeshiva? His Rosh Yeshiva agrees with him. He said, what do I do? So I said, I would say to the guy, like this, you're right. You're 100% right. You have to learn, and you're a master, right? And you had children because there's a mitzvah of a period of rivia. You know? And that's good, Baruch Hashem, time the mitzvah. But Lamaisa, these kids need a father. Need a father. So I suggest you put the children up for adoption. Because for you, it's a bit of a traitor. For you, it's a waste of time. You know? But Lamaisa, what are these kids supposed to do? And I have no time. You know? As I said to one parent who told me this, I said, you have no time now until Nebuch, your kid is either off the derech or hanging off to the side of the road, you know what I mean? And he's not doing so well. Suddenly you have all the time in the world. You'll take him for this bracha, you'll take him for that bracha, you'll bring him to this counseling, this thing, that thing. Then we have all the time in the world. I said, could you imagine that a father has to give a child a medication? And he says, I can't be bothered. So now the kid gets really sick and he's in the hospital. Now you have to stay by the bedside. But when you could solve the problem with a little bit of time, it's a sad reality. It's a sad reality that we don't appreciate what this means. You understand? For ourselves. I'm speaking, again, I always speak, you know, for myself, but, you know, but all of us, we have to look at this as, not that this is something that's getting in the way. You understand? This is an unbelievable opportunity. So, the fellow was an Avreich, it was an Elzman, and his wife was on Shmirat Herayon, as they call it in Eretz Yisrael. I don't know what that is in English, and I didn't really know anybody in America who ever went through this, but evidently, you know, a woman's just spotting during pregnancy, and they put her into the hospital to stay under supervision. You know, she could be there for weeks, she could be there for months. This happens in Eretz Yisrael, you know, from time to time. So here, it's just about Elzman, and his wife is put in for Shmirat Heriyam. And she is in the hospital, and the father is now Mr. Mom. And he's got to take care of all the kids. So what was his Elzman? He's making sandwiches, and, you know, getting the little kids to gun. He's staying home, he's changing diapers, he's, you know, taking care of the kids. Mom is 24/7. If you have a house full of little kids, you know, it's running around the whole time. And finally, Erev Rosh Hashanah, he goes to Shlomo Zalman Orbach in tears. And he says, Rebbe, I don't know what I'm going to do. How can I go into Rosh Hashanah? I lost Elul. He says, Elul, I usually learn with more of a bren, and I daven with more kavana, and I really work very hard, and now I couldn't open a sefer. Every time I try, one of the kids crying or climbing on my lap, or, you know, I daven. If I could get one of the neighbor's kids to stop in so that I could run off the shul, you know what I mean, for a little bit, you know. So that was an unbelievable thing, you know what I mean. I ran in quickly and Kodesh Shmon Esrei and ran out, you know, it was like, and I lost out. And Shlomo Zalman Orbach said to him, you had the best Elul you ever had. He says, what? What are you talking about? And he said, let's talk honestly, you know. He says, you go to yeshiva. You really learn shtak every minute. You don't go out for coffee, you know. Actually, I had an English class. You don't go out for tea. You don't schmooze with the chavrus a little bit. You don't put your head down, you know. He says, you don't always do it 100%. But now it was clear to you what your avodas Hashem was. Your avodas Hashem was your wife's not there. You didn't take care of these kids, and you did it b'lev v'nefesh. You put everything you had into it, 24 hours a day. You walk into Rosh Hashanah and you say, "I did my avodas Hashem," which is an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing, you know. Reuven Feinstein, his father Reb Moshe, missed his bar mitzvah, Moshe Feinstein. And years later, when he was an adult, someone asked Reuven, did you resent it? And he says, no, I didn't. My father explained to me he had to go to the Aguda convention and it was a tzarech for the tzibur, etc. You know, I didn't resent it. I said, why? He said, because I knew my father loved me. How do you know your father loved you? He says, I always had my place by my father at the table. I wasn't shunted off to the side. Sidebar, you know, when my kids were little, so very often we'd have a lot of orchim, you know, and so you have an opportunity for a lot of orchim because, you know, these people never pay only $17,000 a year for tuition to send their daughter to the seminary, and then of course they're thrown out on the street, they have no place to go, you feel bad for the homeless. So you have seminary girls, you have yeshiva bachrim, you have, you know, people who, real orchim. And so, you know, the kids get moved to the back, you know, the kids get put on the children's table, the kids get pushed up to the side, you know. And I only found out years later how my children resented it. And so when I found out, you know, I made a thing. We have a rotation next to Abba, you know. Baruch Hashem, there are three meals on Shabbos, you know. And so we rotate every Shabbos. Who's gonna sit next to Abba? Because I remembered from this story, you know. So I never lost my place. He says, when my father would wake me up in the morning, he says he knew it was very cold, so he would place my clothing on the radiator so that they should be warm, and he would dress me under the covers. This was a funny thing. And the third one, and this was the one that I found absolutely amazing, is we used to go up to the mountains, Catskill Mountains. He says it wasn't quite a bungalow colony; it was a farm. Oh, no facilities, no facilities up there. So there was grass, there was fields, there was fresh air, you know. So the only thing to do was that the farmer would go to town with his little tractor and his little wagon, and you know, that would be once a day he'd go and get supplies. And if I was learning with my father, and he'd hear the tractor, he would close the safer and he'd say, "Run, play with the other children." I have been in shul where I see people have their children sitting next to them who are staying in their chair only because they must be glued to it. You know what I'm saying? The kids are fidgeting and going crazy, and every now and then the father turns and looks at them. They're quiet for like a few minutes, and then they're going crazy. You know? I didn't let my son come with me to shul until he could read. To play, you could stay home to play. You don't have to come. and the kid who can't read, what's he going to do? So I see people give them. They give them a little bag, a little bag of sweets, you know, and they bring them some books, you know what I mean? Now whatever, and they're all sitting there, you know, they're in Gone playing, you know, at the table, you know what I mean? And they're doing their thing, you know. So I waited until, and he would ask me, "What time can I go to shul?" I said, "Not yet. You know, when you're bigger." So when he learned how to read, I would bring him to shul, and he didn't really know how to tell time yet. But I would take off my watch at intervals that I determined, and I'd say, "Okay, go outside and play now. See, this big hand is on the 10. When it gets to the 12, come back." And he'd run outside and he'd play and he'd this and that, and he'd come back. And we'd stay in for whatever little part it was, you know, and I'd take off my watch again, and I'd say, "Go out now and come back here." And he'd run and he'd go outside again. And I didn't stop doing that until he asked me, "Abba, can I stay in?" You know? And I said, "Are you sure? You know, you don't want to go out and play, you know?" Because when we look at our kids, and I tell you what my hallmark has become now, you know. So my wife has this expression she picked up from somebody. She says, "The goal of parenting is not to raise good kids, it's to raise good adults." And we look at children and we say, "Wow, look at this kid, you know." But if you can picture ahead and picture them as adults, right? Which of course requires that you not kill them along the way, you know what I mean? So, I said, I have 8 girls and 1 boy. I've had that for many years. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu just gave me these 2 little boys. I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. And I realized, I said, you know, all these years I had all these girls, and I couldn't understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me these 2 little boys later in life. And then I realized, because if I was younger, I would have had the strength to kill them by now. And now, I can't catch them. Otherwise, you know, girls have their pluses and minuses, but little boys, forget about it, you know. I think my first son was more or less, you know, must have had you know, be a little bit calmer, maybe, he was surrounded by all these girls, I don't know what it is, but these two little boys, thing one and thing two, forget about it. They're bouncing off the walls, I can't even tell you some of the horrible things they do, you know what I mean? And I'm like, "Stop, wait, come back," you know? And my son says, "If I did that, you would have killed me." I said, I know, but I haven't got it in me anymore. But can you see them as adults? Can you see them growing up to be good adults? You know? Sometimes parents go into a panic. My kid doesn't bother. You know what I mean? It's okay. You've got time. You know. We have to be there with them to create that positive. And that's why I see so many fathers, you know, and I've seen it many times, where they want to sit down and learn with their kid, and their kid doesn't want to learn. And the father says, "You're not leaving till you finish this. Or you're not this. You're not that." You know what I mean? And he's gonna. My 4-year-old just turned 5-year-old, so he was 4 years old. So of course they're teaching him how to read, you know, and he doesn't want to read. So I of course went into a panic. He's not going to read. He's not going to go to school. What are we going to do with this kid? What's going to happen? And, you know, my wife keeps saying, "He's only 4. Give him time. Patience, you know." Anyway, so now he's 5, and he started, in the Chena, you know, and he reads all the time. He loves it. He just rattles off the pages, you know. Yeah, it's all little. Sometimes you need time. Sometimes you need patience, you know. There are Shabbos tables where we, you know, we have a vision of what the Shabbos table should be, and we want it to be a real Shabbos table. There was a big time chacham says to me, "says What do you do if the kids don't sit at the Shabbos table? How do you make the kids sit at the Shabbos table?" I said, "I don't make the kids sit at the Shabbos table. Shabbos table is a privilege, an opportunity. They want to run off and play. I don't run off and play. They come back. I want them to come to the Shabbos table because they want to, you know, because they want to sing the Zmiras, because they want to come over and do it. So the obligation on me is I have to make it enjoyable." I had an English avreich who lived in my building years ago, and he said, "You know, I was so proud of myself. I'm such a master machanich, because my little son said to me, 'I can't wait for Shabbos. I love Shabbos. I can't wait for Shabbos.'" So he says, "Really? What do you love about Shabbos?" He says, "The Olafskis have a Shabbos party. You know, we would make a Shabbos party where the little kids could invite over all their little friends, and they got treats, and we made brachas, and we sang songs, and you know what I mean? And it was this exciting thing. But as I got older, I could give it to the older children to do. You know what I mean? They saw already my methodology. I let them take it over, you know. But the kids look forward to that exciting, that kind of a treat. That's what a little child understands. You know, we have to gear it towards them. So as my kids were slowly making the transition from difficult children into dysfunctional teenagers, and at that point, and we're basically, they don't even talk to you, they just roll their eyes, you know what I mean? So and by the way, I have to just say this, because you know, I used to write a column on Chinuch Banim in the Hamadiyah, and I stopped. You know, there's a lot of reasons I stopped, but people said to me, why'd you stop? I said, because I finally figured out the secret of good chinuch, and it's only one line. It doesn't make a lot of articles. Don't say 90% of what you want to say. There are two reasons. One is, it's probably destructive. The second one is, they're not going to listen anyway. So just narrow it down to about 10%. and when I... it's a different world. Rosh Hashanah says that a door today is 2 years. It's 2 years. When I was growing up, I never said no to my parents. There wasn't such a concept. I never said no to your parents. My parents said something to me, and I said, no. I wouldn't say it twice. I didn't say that much, you know? Not with all my teeth, you know? Forget about it. And now you can say things to kids, and they say, no. No. You want to throw me out? Throw me out. I'm like, what do I do now? I used to say, when I was a kid, my parents would tell me to do things, and I'd mumble and grumble, but I would do it. Now, I say things to my kids, and they say, you know, something back to me, and I mumble and grumble still, because I can't say it. I've never once reached a point where I can tell somebody something, you know? but it's you know, it's a different dance, it's a different generation. So, we had to rethink the Shabbat table. Me and my wife sat down and said, how can we make this a, you know, adolescent/teenage-friendly, you know, experience. So I would tell stories, and I would tell jokes, and then we would do different kind of things. I'd let them pick the songs. I would do all kinds of things which were not my perception of the Shabbos table, you know? So, you know, all the different things that I found that we had to do to make it more enjoyable, and that, I heard once from an Adam Gadol, as long as it's enjoyable, as long as it's besimcha, they will never leave. They might wander, but they will always come back because it has a good taste. It's something that's enjoyable to them. And no matter where they may wander or what they may face, you know? So Baruch Hashem, as they're approaching to being adults, you know, you get to see some of the payers, you know? And you see the attitude starts to change, and their behavior starts to change, and things start to go, you know? But during that critical stage, I remember those words, you know, of Reuven Feinstein, where he says that my father of Moshe, if he saw that all the children were going off to play, he closed the safe and let me go. I met a fellow from South Africa who had joined the Hell's Angels. Now that's about as far as you can go from the cheder education that he had received, I think, you know. He was also a smuggler and other kind of things he did, but the Hell's Angel thing really got to me. And I said to him, What happened? So he says he remembers. This was one of the major moments. As he says, he was in Johannesburg and it snowed. And almost never snowed. And the kids were looking out the window at the snow, they were like amazed. And the Rebbe says, no, anyone who looks outside the window is not going outside for recess. That's it, right? Because I couldn't help it. And I looked out the window, and he said to me, you don't go outside. And came recess, and all the kids went outside to play in the snow, and I had to stay inside. And that hurt, and that sense of deprivation. And I contrast this to the mayor of Jerusalem, Uri Lopiansky, who's a firm fellow. And there was one day when there was snow, not a lot of snow. A little bit of snow in Yerushalayim, not even enough to close down Yerushalayim. It doesn't take much to close down Yerushalayim, but it was really more of a sprinkling, you know? And he called the snow day, and he closed all the schools and everything, you know. And they were interviewing him on the radio, and they said, you know, we lost X amount of money, the business community, this time, because people didn't come in for work, and because he stopped doing it, no, 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 you know, what'd you do? And he says, the children of Yerushalayim deserve a snow day. You know, then let them go outside and play. I'll go ahead and play. Somebody asked Rav Shach, how do you pick the right cheder for your child? He says, the one that has the most recess. That's a good way to do it. And a friend of mine went with his kids to Rav Shach when he was very, very old. And he says, how do you, what's the secret, the good cheder? And he says, I'll show you. And he had brought his children along for a bracha. And Rav Shach got up, and you know, he was very stooped over, it was very hard. And my friend said, no, Rebbe, I'll get a few. He said, no, I want to do it myself. and he went to the closet, he opened it up and took out a box of chocolates. And he slowly, painfully moves back and he tells the child, take a chocolate, make a bracha, you know, covers it up, and he brings back the box himself. And he sits down again behind the box. And it was a very long process. And he looks at his father and he says, that's cooked in a pot. But they make the bracha on the sweet, and they see the effort that you put into it, and they see, you know, the love that you have for it. You know, I can't speak for everyone here. I grew up in a generation where the idea was respect. It's respect, respect, respect. We're in a door where they don't understand what that is. It's a society where everything is gone. Everything is gone. Unbelievable. Every institution is broken down. Every concept is broken down. There is no concept of respect. You know? You see kids going around dressed in ways that in our day people would rather kill themselves than be seen like that. You know what I mean? And this is already Mikubal. It's all gone. Everything is gone. The outside society is broken down to the point where it's just Chaim Ablit Surah, and it's pounding on the doors, and to think that none of it's going to see them, you're making a mistake. And all we can do is give so much warmth and so much love and so much understanding, and understand that that's our Avodas Hashem. That's our Avodas Hashem. You know, that's the time that we're investing, that we're going to see those payers from our Kindleach and Mitzvah Hashem. So next year, when we are in the base of Mikdash and the Melech HaMashiach is reading Sefer Devarim, we understand that we'll be there in Mitzvah Hashem, Bizkeinenu B'Reinu. Yeah? With our old and with our young, all of us together will be there with that sense of accomplishment.